Hey, everybody. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Press Row Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Out of the Park Developments, makers of Out of the Park Baseball 18, MLB Manager 2017, and Franchise Hockey Manager 3. These games are all available today. Out of the Park Baseball 18 is the follow-up to the 2016 Metacritic PC Game of the Year. It is by far the best recognized baseball strategy game you can ever get. It has got a tremendous amount of features designed for longtime players and newcomers this year. There's no way that if you love baseball that you're not going to have fun playing this game. Just an example new for this season, we've obviously got all the 2017 opening day rosters for Major League Baseball, Minor League Baseball, 8 international leagues, a bunch of indie leagues as well. We've got new tournaments and fall leagues. We've got a better redesigned injury system. We have the Negro Leagues in here for the very first time so that you can really do some amazing what-if scenarios. We've got improved player morale and team chemistry, improved player creation and development system, better game recaps, and so much more. We're so excited about Out of the Park Baseball 18. So many people are playing it, enjoying it. We are thrilled about it. And, of course, don't forget MLB Manager 2017. Take Out of the Park Baseball with you on the go with MLB Manager 2017, which is new and improved this year, especially with a new user interface, making it easier than ever to have fun. And, of course, Franchise Hockey Manager 3, the only licensed game by the NHL that you can get on the PC. The award-winning series continues as well. So Out of the Park Developments brings you the Press Row Podcast. Go check us out at ootpdevelopments.com, and you can pick up Out of the Park Baseball 18, MLB Manager 2017, and Franchise Hockey Manager 3. Thanks, as always, for your support, and thank you for listening to the Press Row Podcast. Enjoy the show.
Well, we made it through E3 and EA Play Week, which is always just an avalanche of information and new media and the upcoming games, including those we care a lot about, as the majority of sports games are slated to release later this summer and very early fall. We're going to get some hands-on impressions from the show floor, possibly for the next episode, but before then, Rich Grisham, who joins me for this episode of the Press Row Podcast, what do you say we clean up on some of the rest of the information that came out following the EA press briefing, which we covered heavily on our last show. So if you're out there and you didn't listen to that one, check it out, because we go into everything Madden, FIFA, and NBA Live. And how about we also discuss just some of our reactions and ramifications of everything we learned across gaming this last week?
Let's do it. I mean, E3 is the big... It's still the big deal. I mean, it's evolving and changing, and this year is a great example of that. But it's still a big event, no matter how you look at it, and lots of good stuff came out of it.
Yeah, whether it's EA Play or the PlayStation experience, you see these companies starting to kind of branch off, and they're abandoning the show floor aspect of it. But it's still the time when consumers are the most conscious of news, and they're looking for it the most, and it makes the biggest impact to make an announcement or show off the game first opportunity or right before release as another way to get on the minds of consumers. So it's still a very big deal. And let's look at the one conference, the press briefing, that was really probably the most anticipated this year, because it involved a new console, which we knew about already. It had been officially revealed, but finally the final details on it and the first viewing of it in action with games being announced for it and how it's going to utilize its extra power, and that's Xbox with the Xbox One X, as it's going to be called. That was officially named, priced. Some of the specs were finalized on that. And we also found out ways it's going to enhance the games. So the biggest thing with this, Rich, was probably coming down to the price. $500 is what they want for this, and I think it's justifiable as far as the power goes. It's definitely, you know, a step above the PS4 Pro even. So that's justifiable, but I think it's going to be difficult for consumers to actually see a reason to buy it. Because out of this conference, I'm still interested in the Xbox One X. We'll talk more about that later and how it relates to the sports games. But in general, I didn't see anything out of this conference that made me think, well, I have to go buy one.
Well, that really depends upon your perspective. I am of the perspective that I am going to go buy one. And for the reasons we've talked about before, I'm a big fan of the digital subscription services, and Microsoft's are the best.
Right.
They're whatever I pay, whatever it's called, I pay $10 a month and I have downloadable access to many, 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 many games, a number of them excellent, as well as EA Access. The Xbox One X is very attractive because I don't need to buy anything other than that. Those two things, which granted are expensive, but that box and those two subscriptions will power 3 or 4 years of enjoyment easily. So for me, who has not upgraded any of my consoles, I still have my launch day PS4 and launch day Xbox One.
Same here.
Right? So this is – I'm not – by the way, I'm not saying I'm going to go out and buy it at launch. I'm not saying I won't go out and buy it at launch either. I don't know. Like, if I can go on Amazon and buy it, there's a good chance I will. So I'm going to get it, and it's going to be for those purposes. And I realize those purposes, I say, meaning just using it as the machine driven by those subscriptions, I realize that may not be a particularly common thread for a lot of people. So I get that. But I'm on board.
Yeah, it comes out in November, which is after most of the games for the year release, or at least the sports games are going to have been out for, at that point, 2 months. Or going on 2 months. And so the impact of what that's going to offer, I think, is going to be muted, at least at the start. But I find it, it's just $500 is a lot of money, right? Especially when you can buy a normal Xbox One, normal PS4 for the same price, basically. So this thing is targeting people who are very focused on having the most powerful thing on the market, having the best visuals, the best graphics, having certain advantages over the other systems, since obviously you have to have a 4K TV for it to really matter. So you have to have a big investment already in your kind of electronic focus area of your home for this to actually matter. So it's interesting, but I do think, for me, the reason why I would want to get it, and I'm anticipating I will, is what it's going to do for the sports games. Now, I don't think they're going to really magnify as far as the marketing goes and all that, although they could, because it'll be November, so it really wouldn't hurt them. They just want to avoid that whole thing where people who don't have a certain system feel like they're getting an inferior product. But it's going to enhance the visuals, obviously, with the 4K. The other big advantage, in my mind, is going to be the loading times, which are going to be reduced. And I still think loading times are an issue with a lot of sports games. With most other games, if you go in and play Uncharted, you might have a long loading time loading your save, but after that, you're never getting interrupted. With sports games, you're in and out of games so often, and they're trying to reduce your time spent in each individual game, that loading times end up mattering more and more. So that's one of the features that I'm most looking forward to out of it.
Great point, and definitely another reason to consider these things. I mean, everybody's budgets are different. I haven't spent money on new hardware in a while, and I'm sort of feeling that by this time, and you know, when it launches, especially, I'll be picking one of these up.
You just bought a Switch, Rich.
That's true. I did. But I mean, I haven't upgraded. I haven't upgraded, as I said, the PS4, the Xbox One. Those are still my launch day ones.
Yeah. So out of the games that were shown, Rich, what most interested you? Because obviously there's one that would hit the radar for us, and that's Forza 7, which is a Microsoft game. It's going to capitalize on the benefits of the system better than probably any other game, because it's first party and they're building it with that in mind. Downside, you're going to need over 100 gigs on your hard drive, Rich. Did you hear that?
I did. That's a lot.
Yep. That's not just a lot as far as will you have a big enough hard drive to hold more than just a few games. These are obviously going to get bigger as they have assets that for the 4K, but think about people who buy digitally, and you like to download games digitally, like you said, Xbox Game Pass, EA yep. Access. If you're downloading multiple games a month, you're probably going to hit whatever cap that your internet provider has put on you.
Yeah, which is, it's a problem.
I don't know what it is now. I think, you know, like with Comcast, it used to be, it may be different now. It used to be like 350 gigs a month, something you would never hit unless you were downloading movies, like high, you know, just like any
large lots of
files.
Stuff.
Yeah. Abnormal stuff like that most people wouldn't be doing. But now with video games, whether it's NBA 2K, which is 50 plus gigs and then 8 gigs on the PS4 with every single patch they've put out, or games like Forza 7, which is going to be over 100 gigs, you start to get into this is concerning when they also add in patches and all of that on a monthly basis and you wanting to download multiple games.
No doubt. It's an issue and there's no getting around it. I don't know what my cap is. I don't think I hit it, but I wouldn't be surprised if I do, especially as you say, downloading these games. You know, and I was there are large parts of the country that don't have broadband access still. A lot of people don't realize that. I was just reading today in the Wall Street Journal about that. So, you know, there's a material number of people to whom this is not an optimal situation. There's no doubt about it.
Rocket League, Forza Horizon 3 are two games that I love. That Rich, I know you love Forza Horizon 3. I don't remember what you thought of Rocket League, but both of those games are going to have free patches that take them up to the Xbox One X capabilities. So you'll have 4K, you'll have whatever other benefits they can squeeze in there. So other than that, what else did you see at the Xbox conference that interested you?
You know, I'm not
if
really
anything, Rich.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm not big into, you know, there's 6 or 7 games that I'm going to buy between now and the end of the year. And most of them are on the Switch, and one of them is Forza 7. And so, I mean, that's really what interests me. And there's nothing I saw at E3 about Forza that made me more interested. I just love the series. Every game is terrific, and they are just they're at the top of their game. So it's cool that they were what they showed about it. But yeah, I know what I'm already interested in. You know, it's the Switch games like Mario Odyssey. Very interested to see what that is. Mm-hmm. Forza, obviously, all the sports games, Pro Evo. We're going to talk about that. I can't think of anything that really jumped out at me as got me really interested other than what I already knew that I was into. But, you know, that's because I really just, you know, there's not that much that I can play anyway. And what I already know that's coming out that is of interest to me is more than enough to cover me anyway.
Yeah, for me it was Crackdown 3. And now, did you play the original Crackdown, Rich?
I sure did. Great
yes.
game.
One of my favorite games ever. The sequel was a bit of a letdown, but I'm very excited for Crackdown 3. I was happy to see it, although it didn't look particularly good. I'm still excited for that one. I'm just, again, it's another game where I look at it and say, I'm not sure I need Xbox One or the Xbox One X for that.
No, you don't. There's
anything,
no doubt.
Yeah, or anything else necessarily. I just want it.
Right. No, I mean, that's the thing. I'm not a big, you know, teraflops guy. I don't have a 4K TV. I don't, you know, you could show me the difference between Xbox One and Xbox One X visuals. You know, I think they did some side by side. I don't really care. And I don't mean that in a flippant way. That's just at this point with the games in such high fidelity already, it doesn't have the same impact that it used to when you would go from a PS1 to a PS2 or a PS2 to a PS3 and so on and so forth. That's the other thing. But the power, though, it's nice to know what is under the hood is the best you can get. And I like that a lot.
So a little more subdued this year was the Sony press briefing. And this one I watched, and after it was over, I thought, why did they collect everybody in an auditorium just to show a string of trailers? I just thought
that was interesting.
Yeah. this is where it's gone now, right? They even sell tickets, or I don't know if they're free, maybe, but they have those showings, and they've done that for a few years now, where people, there's certain movie theaters around the country where you can go and watch it. They give out some swag and stuff along with it, but basically that's what the people there in LA did. They went to the auditorium and watched an hour's worth of trailers, which is good in one sense, because the complaint used to be there wasn't enough games, there wasn't a big enough focus on games. Sony would roll out, you know, a thing about their watching movies on the PS4 or whatever it might be, stuff that was seemed unrelated to what people who were watching were interested in. So all they did was show games, but all it was trailers, and I thought that was weird and just not very effective. I didn't get excited about much there. I liked the Spider-Man trailer, but again, that game's not coming out anytime soon. And the other thing I noted from that press briefing was the show, MLB The Show, didn't show up at all, which is not unusual, but I thought we might see something if they were going to do virtual reality in the game, because that would have been a good time to kind of put it on.
Or
at the PlayStation Experience in December. So I'm wondering if they're just not even going the virtual reality route there.
I don't know. I hope they don't. Maybe if they come up with something good, that's fine. Virtual reality is just not in my, not in my situation right now. I just have no desire to set all that stuff up and put time aside for that, especially because I've already got so much other good games to play. But as far as the conferences, it's so smart for them to do this. What have E3 conferences been consistently bad at for years? They have produced hundreds of cringeworthy moments.
Yeah.
There is nothing worse than a very uncomfortable developer on stage having an awkward pre-written conversation.
We're trying to shoehorn in YouTubers, people inexperienced.
Live demonstrations of people just standing on a stage holding a controller and playing a game. Like that's those work out poorly more often than anything. You know, obviously Joe Montana standing on stage or Kobe Bryant. So it's so smart because now there's like, you know what? All everyone says is we want to hear about the games, so let's just show them all the games. It's great. I mean, if I were in charge, I would be doing something very similar. I can't believe anybody would pay or even want to sit in an auditorium and watch that, though.
Yeah,
but that's what these things have become. You know, they used to be press briefings about sales numbers and market penetration and stuff, and then it sort of became these. They would talk about some of that business stuff, but then they'd go more games, and now it's completely just it's all about games. And I think it's better because if it is so focused on games, and it's very well suited to the live streaming world that we're in. So I think it was a great idea. I think it ultimately is the way to do it because it's just awkward. All the other stuff they've done in the past, just so many times, it did not work out well.
Yeah, I just wondered the necessity of actually holding it in a physical place.
There is not.
Nintendo doesn't do that now, right?
Right.
Does their pre-recorded... What do they? I don't even remember what they call it.
Treehouse.
Treehouse. Yeah.
And they're great, by the way. They're fantastic.
That might be, I think, the better way to go.
I mean, that's what I would do because it just makes nothing but complete sense.
Hey, everybody. Rich Grisham here. We're going to take just a moment to thank our sponsors for this week, HelloFresh. These guys do a fantastic job, and I am now a customer, and you can help the Press Row podcast and have some great meals, and we'll tell you how to do that at the end of this. So real quick, let me tell you what HelloFresh is. They are on a mission to save home cooking because it's just too good to go away. They want to make cooking more fun, so they focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. So they think of themselves as three different kind of companies all at one. Number one, a farm-to-box company, because they want everyone to have access to fresh ingredients that inspire great meals. But they're also a couch-to-kitchen company because they think the best way to kick those 5 p.m. excuses is by feeling unstoppable in the kitchen. And third, they are a fork-to-feel-good company because when you cook and eat delicious and healthy meals, you're going to want to keep doing it again and again. And I can vouch for this because HelloFresh sent us a big old box with several meals, and it came in an insulated box, and it had the frozen ice packs in there, which kept everything nice and fresh. And those, by the way, are reusable. So we tossed them into the freezer, and we actually wound up using them when we went to the beach a few days later. They offer different things, a classic box, a veggie box, and a family box. You can order 3, 4, or 5 different meals per week designed for either 2 or 4 people. New recipes are created every week. In 6 easy-to-master steps, they get you chopping, zesting, and cooking like a natural, because most of the recipes take just 30 minutes and require minimal equipment, and this is totally legit. As I mentioned, my wife and my son, he's 9, he was working with her, and they got all the stuff out, and they chopped, and they zested, and they cooked, and they did everything that they had to do, and it's a really, really great meal at the end, and I am now officially a HelloFresh customer. So the way that you can help us out is simple. All you got to do, you got to go to HelloFresh.com and enter the code PRESSROW30 when you subscribe. When you do that, you get $30 off your first week of deliveries. That is a great savings. So HelloFresh.com, enter PRESSROW30 when you subscribe. This is a really good service. It really makes life easier and better. You know, if you want to have a good meal, but you want to prepare it and you want to sort of get everybody in the kitchen, this is a fantastic way to do it, and it's cost-effective, too. For less than $10 a meal, you're going to have much better dinner than if you were, you know, to do that guilty pleasure, drive on over to that fast food place or order that same pizza that you've had 4 times in the last 8 days. Check out HelloFresh.com, enter the promo code PRESSROW30, get $30 off your first week of deliveries. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, HelloFresh. Thank you for listening to the Press Row Podcast, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Let's talk about Nintendo, Rich.
Okay.
There's a lot going on there. You know, we've questioned the viability for sports games there. So let's talk about a couple of them coming up. Let's start with FIFA on the Switch, because we've had some debates over the potential of this game doing well there, and how much effort is being put in there. And we found out a lot more about FIFA on the Switch this last week. So we got information on the game, which includes it's going to have Ultimate Team, it's going to have career mode.
Yep.
It's basically, I would say, it's comparable to FIFA 16 because it doesn't have the Frostbite engine and it doesn't have the Journey story mode. It's got everything else, I think. And its gameplay is going to be similar to what FIFA 16 was, although, you know, because it doesn't have the new engine, but it will have better gameplay based off of that. So I think the impression people got out of it, based on what I saw from people I trust who were there, was that the game is in pretty good shape, and it's definitely a better effort than they thought it would be, especially given the track record with EA and other third parties on Nintendo platforms, which don't tend to sell third-party games very well, that it's coming out in pretty good shape, but there's still question about how it's going to sell, and we'll talk about what Cat Bailey, friend of the show, often on the show, wrote about on US Gamer about it. Because I think it's interesting her take on how this game, how she sees it doing. And we'll talk with her about it on her next time she's on the Press Row podcast. But first, Rich, what did you get out of the last week to make you feel better about FIFA on the Switch, I would imagine?
Oh, yeah. I am extremely confident that it will be a fun game. Because it is based on a couple of years ago console version, and it's FIFA. And it's going to be on the Switch, which I can take with me or not. I love that.
That's what the biggest selling point is going to be, that you can play it anywhere.
Yes.
Especially with Ultimate Team, which seems well-suited to pull it up, improve on your roster, play around in the marketplace, do quick, you know, those quick type of challenges that help you through Ultimate Team. Seems perfectly suited for it. The question just, of course, being, is Nintendo a place where people will care to do it?
Absolutely. Everyone that has a Switch is buying all of the games for it. It's going to do great. I'm telling you, it's going to sell to a very high percentage of Switch owners. as will NBA 2K. I do. I'm going to buy it. Now, granted, I always say just because I do or do not do something, I'm never saying that's what everybody will do or won't. But I'm saying I'm buying it day one because I don't really need to buy FIFA on the other platforms. I get 10 hours of it on EA Access. Then I'll play Pro Evo. And then when FIFA goes into the vault, mm-hmm. in the following spring is when I'll play it, which is exactly what I did this year. But I will buy it on the Switch because I will really enjoy playing a career mode on my Switch. I'm very excited about it. The Switch is a wonderful machine for those who have it. It's just a wonderful machine. So being able to play a legit game of FIFA on there or a legit game of NBA 2K is very exciting. Very exciting to me.
I definitely see the appeal in that. And impressions from those who got to play it seem to be that, yeah, this is going to be a game you want to play on the go. May not be the game you want to dock and play on your TV because it's only going to be 720p and it's the older engine and all of that. But
I'm fine with that. I mean, again, I understand that being the newest, latest, best is important to some people. Mm-hmm. But see, I'm looking from my perspective. I'm going to be playing Pro Evo on my PS4. That's going to be my big screen TV, my big screen soccer game, and FIFA will be what I take with me. So that's going to be my use case, because I am obviously going to spend a lot of time playing Pro Evo 18, because I spent a lot of time playing 17 and 16.
See, one thing I worry about with this is I think this Switch also would have been a good place to have something like a story mode, simply because if you are going to sell FIFA on the Switch, I think it's mostly going to be people there who are not experienced with the franchise necessarily. It depends on what they're targeting, because really, is EA expecting to sell this game to FIFA fans who already have other consoles, or are they trying to sell it to a new group of consumers who haven't been buying FIFA and probably a younger group?
So it's all of those things.
Yeah.
It's all of those things, right? And that's what it needs to be.
Ideally, yeah.
Right, because soccer is an incredibly popular sport, and it's really not that complicated of a video game to at least grasp. Like, if you haven't played FIFA in a long time and you start playing it and you just put it on, like, semi-pro, you know, soccer's a pretty easy game. You know, there's pass and there's shoot, yeah. right? Like, you can sort of get it. Like, it's not incredibly,
at least
if you can get to the game, if you can figure out, and I'm not joking, if you can figure out how to get from the opening screen onto the soccer field easily,
yeah.
you know, it's not. A lot of people understand, you know, would understand how to play it. So they have a lot going for them.
I think what the deal with FIFA is, I've always viewed it as probably the most accessible of the sports games. Not necessarily that you're going to pick it up and succeed at it, but you're going to pick it up and understand it.
You know what to do.
Functionally. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Especially if you've ever watched soccer or ever played soccer and you just have a basic understanding of how to move the ball around.
That's the thing. Like, you know, lots and lots and lots of kids play soccer.
Right.
And so, you know, and a lot of my son's friends are soccer players and they love sports video games and they love FIFA. So there's a whole bunch of people out there. I'm telling you, if I had an opportunity to bet on this, I would bet the over on whatever anybody is projecting FIFA to sell on the Switch. I think it's going to do great. I really think it's going to do great.
I'm not as optimistic as you, Rich. And Kat Bailey isn't as optimistic either, even though she had positive thoughts on the game. So let's explain.
What does she
why.
Know? She's only the editor-in-chief. Yeah. Come on.
let's go through a couple of her reasons why, and then we'll talk with her about this, like I said, in an upcoming episode. Her reasons, and we may have hit on these a little bit already, but her first big reason is that fans of the FIFA series have already bought into the game on other consoles. They're either invested already on the PS4 or they're invested already on the Xbox One, and we're talking worldwide because this is a game that sells upwards of 15 million copies every year worldwide. One of the biggest games in the world on a yearly basis, if not the biggest. So people are already conditioned to buying it. They have friends online, and or they have competitions they take part in, or they're just, that's their one system they already have. Whatever it is, people are already somewhere else with FIFA. And so the difficulty becomes, are they going to downgrade? Because despite what we say, it's still a downgrade. It's not going to have the Frostbite engine. It's not going to have the story mode. Or are they going to buy the game twice? So that's what you're looking at as far as people who already are into FIFA. And then, are they going to be able to sell this game to people who haven't bought FIFA before?
Well, there's a lot of accuracy in her projection. She's right in a lot of cases. I'm not that case because I'm going to play 10 hours of FIFA on EA Access.
You're a weird dude, Rich.
Then I'm going to play Pro Evo, and then I'm going to play FIFA again.
Most people don't play
when it goes in the vault.
Yeah.
No, but I. That's why I say she's right in a lot of ways. But there will be people who will pick it up for the Switch. There will be plenty of people who buy two copies of it. I guarantee you there will be. I'm sure it'll be in a respectable number of people will do that as well. I think there's just a lot more use cases for it. I think it's going to do really well, and I'm fascinated to see if basically you guys are right or if I'm right.
Yeah,
I'll be right.
I don't think. No. The problem is we're not going to know. They're not going to tell us.
Sure, they'll give you some idea. They'll absolutely give you some idea. You're right.
Well,
I guess we'll have an idea,
Rich, when we find out if they're putting the game out again next year and whether it's going to match what features are in the other systems or not.
Well, and I'm sure that at one of the shareholder meetings, well before that, they'll give some sort of indication whether. I'm sure someone's going to ask, are you going to put more onto the Switch, right? Because those are the kind of questions.
Right. Are we going to see Madden? Right. And are we going to see, NBA 2K is already there. I guess, would we see NBA Live? I would doubt that. But I guess Madden would naturally be the next one to transition over if that's the case.
I mean, the Switch is a very, very, very good selling console. EA should be there. You know what I mean? Like the Wii U was not a very good selling console, and EA made the smart decision to get out of there. But conversely, people are buying these things in tremendous numbers. So get on there. If I was a shareholder, and I'm not a direct shareholder, but I'm sure through whatever sort of mutual funds that I may have, if I'm a shareholder of EA, I'm like, get on that platform because people are buying it and people are buying games for it. I'm not in the there are no games on the Switch camp. There are plenty of good games, but there are a lot less games on the Switch than there are on the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4. So relatively speaking, there are far fewer options. That's another great reason to get in there because you're competing with less for those dollars than you are in those other platforms.
Let's talk about our other point. Main point was that the online ecosystem will be too small. Nintendo doesn't have a great track record with online, obviously, and then bring in however many people they can to the FIFA series. Are they, if they're secondary buyers, if they're buying this for the second time, like we've talked about, could be a potential possibility, is that, they're not going to play, most likely, they're not going to play Ultimate Team on both systems. They're probably going to be playing that on the other one.
You never know. You don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people who play Madden Mobile and Madden on the 360. They're different. Right, I'm not saying that's
right,
the same thing.
Right, but they're
thing.
Not playing it at the same time as they're playing an Ultimate Team on another
one. No, I get it.
They're not spending money and time because that's once you start putting in, you can't really do both.
Sure, you can if you really want to. You're telling me there aren't people who are going to be playing Ultimate Team on two different systems? Of course there are, because if they play it on one, they like it, so they'll play it on another. It may not be a significant number. It may be a significant number. We don't know, but we know that. There were plenty of years when I would buy the PSP and the Vita version of FIFA or Madden, as well as the PS4 version of it. So, there is precedent for buying a couple of different versions of a game. And online, yes, she's totally right. Like, no one knows what it's going to be like. It seems to be great for Mario Kart, right? So perhaps within the game itself.
That's a Nintendo game, though, of course.
No, I get it. That's my point. I'm just saying, like, the one game that I've played online on the Switch has been, like, perfect online. I've had no issues.
Right.
So at least there's a positive example. So she is right. However, there it may be fine. And so far, the evidence is that it has a chance to be fine online.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I guess if you told me, like, hey, Brian, we got another version of MLB The Show here. Do you want to start your Diamond Dynasty? I would just quit gaming completely. I can't do it. I've already given up on it on the one. Like, there's too much time. It's too much of an investment of time and money, potentially, to go and do it twice and start over or whatever. I couldn't.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there may only be five people in the world to do it, but there will be some, because people who play Ultimate Team like Ultimate Team. And I think given more options to play things, they might just completely – most will just pick one and choose it. But the fact that they know it's coming out on the Switch, right, they might just go instead of the PS4, go to the Switch. You know, for all the people who play online, there's also a bunch of people who don't play online and don't care about online, for example. And the opportunity to bring FIFA 18 to play it wherever they want to, however they want to, I think is going to be very appealing to a bigger group of people than you guys think.
Do you believe that a company like EA would ever go for cross-network play? Now, I don't think it would work in this scenario because we've got different engines running. But ideally, wouldn't it be amazing for EA and for consumers if everyone on the Switch and Xbox One and PlayStation 4 all were within the same ecosystem of Ultimate Team and could play each other and could battle for cards and open packs with each other and do that and like create that competition and cultivate that community, that one big community, instead of having it fractured from console to console?
Yeah, it's got to go. That's where it has to go. And frankly, there's precedent now because whatever they're doing with Minecraft on the Switch, right? Like, aren't they allowing...
So... Yeah, I was going to bring that up. That's what I was getting to there with that transition was cross-network play is there now for Switch, Xbox One, and PC, for Minecraft, and for Rocket League. Rocket League being another game that's coming to Nintendo Switch. It's going to be late in the year, but one of the best games of the last few years, one of the most popular games, certainly. And they're going to have cross-network play, but Sony's not allowing it. So it's just with Rocket League and Minecraft, everybody together, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, PC, and PlayStation 4 off on its own.
Yep, so that's where it's going to go. And if they're not already working on it, I'm sure they will soon, because it encourages more people to play. Because if you know that you can play it in more places, then you will more than likely keep playing it and spend additional money. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think if the feature sets were equal and the Ultimate Teams were all combined across any platform, then the Switch would have a huge potential to be probably the preferred system for people. It's just, you know, whether the power is there to actually create a game that's equal enough to allow play against people online. That may never happen, but the portability aspect and everything, like I said earlier, for Ultimate Team is really an incredible opportunity.
Agreed.
So, yeah, we'll check back on that, and we'll talk with Kat and see what she thinks after, I believe, she spent time playing it. FIFA Switch, that is, and then we'll see where we go from there. Another game, Rich, it didn't show up at a press briefing, but it did have some news and new trailers. Pro Evolution Soccer 2018,
yes,
which of course
we
are amped for.
Super fan.
No surprise. The big news we got, so they went in deeper. They released a lot more information on kind of the pillars of what they've done for this year's game in terms of gameplay and presentation and graphics and modes, improvements to modes that were there, and addition of modes that are brand new, and then, you know, the PC version being the newer generation based on the new, essentially equal to what you're getting on the consoles. But the biggest news, and I thought it was interesting, that they're going this route, potentially could really help them in the battle with FIFA for some mind share, is that they are doing an online beta with their brand new 3-on-3 online co-op mode. That's running July 20th through the 31st on both PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. It's the first online beta they've done in 7 years of any type. And then they're going to take feedback from that beta and implement some changes and adjustments and all that for release in September. And it makes a lot of sense. Number one, it helps advertise the mode. It gets people to try it. It gets people to try Pro Evolution that may be FIFA fans. It's a great opportunity for them to jump out in front of everything else that's going on later in the summer. And then also it's going to help balance what is a new mode for them, this new online co-op 3v3, and also work on the servers at the same time. So hopefully it works when the game releases. So this is something to look forward to. We're only really about a month away from this actually coming out.
It's great. It's fantastic. What is up with the 3-on-3 between this game, between the Olympics, adding 3-on-3 basketball, and the new Big 3 basketball league that's cranking up? I'm seeing billboards as I was driving home tonight from the airport.
Madden's 3 versus 3 squads.
My goodness. Yeah. What is going on? Craziness.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. So, look, you're not going to find a bigger supporter of Pro Evolution than me. Whatever they can do to get more people playing it, I love it.
Was there anything else about the news that came out on Pro Evolution that caught your eye, or at least the trailer or their little presentation they did on a live stream?
Yeah, I was just happy. I'm really happy because this is a franchise that I don't think Konami probably expected to be here if they would have been honest about it 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And so to see it represented strongly, this little engine that could, simply because the game, the core game, was so good, it triumphed over so many other challenges. It just makes me happy to see it and to see the improvements and read about what they're doing. There's nothing that stands out other than, yes, this is so good. I'm just so happy that it clearly seems to be driving some. It seems like it must be doing well enough to get this. So that gives me hope because I love the game so much. That's really, it's just happiness.
Yeah, and I don't know what the numbers are. It does. It obviously does well enough, and we've talked about how it's strong in certain regions, stronger than FIFA in certain regions. Worldwide, obviously, FIFA has a gigantic edge, but it's still a strong brand, and I think it's something they're looking to continue building instead of giving up on.
Well, and Konami has given up on most other traditional video games. This and what, maybe one other franchise are left, you know, that get sort of the AAA treatment. So even more so, it's that so much inspirational of a story because, you know, Konami has shed themselves of a lot and has focused in very different directions. So even more impressive that it clearly must be doing well enough to make that happen. That's a big deal.
Finally, Rich, let's talk a little bit about E3 itself. And we went into a little bit about what's going on with it as far as the briefings and companies leaving the show floor and all that. This was the first year they let public register pay to attend, and pretty much everything I've read was about how much of a disaster it was and how much press that were there wish they hadn't gone, or people who paid, what was it, $250 a ticket, thought it was a complete waste of money, and they left after a few hours and decided they weren't going back. I mean, they packed way too many people, and last time I went to E3, I don't remember what that was, 3 or 4 years ago. At that point, I decided it just wasn't worth it. It wasn't enjoyable. I wasn't getting much out of it to share with readers and listeners. So I stopped going. But back then, even it was just kind of hectic and a lot of people, very uncomfortable environment. But this, and I saw pictures, I'm not claustrophobic necessarily, but walking through a mass of people like that, or being unable to walk through a mass of people like that, or being stuck in 6-hour lines to play a 10-minute demo, whatever it is, I'm so glad I wasn't there, and I really felt bad for people who had to deal with that, and especially people who have to try and accomplish something when they're there. I'm not sure what's going to happen with E3, if they have to go to a bigger venue, if they eventually just decide they're not going to do anymore. I think the number of tickets they sold, it'll be interesting to see whether they can duplicate that next year, because it was such a I've always wanted to go to E3 type of thing, that they got so many people buying tickets for. Whether they're going to be able to do that again next year after the experience that people had this year, I wonder, and we'll see where it goes from there. But what do you think about how they're handling things now?
Well, you and I are similar in that we don't like the massive crowds and throngs of people in small places. And so I have avoided E3 for the last few years for a lot of those reasons, although I did go to E3 a couple of years ago without even going onto the show floor, but I was there and was able to spend some time with some friends and stuff. That was more than a couple of years, that was probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not my thing to be on convention or conference floors. PAX East is another one I've gone. It's just too packed. There's too many people. It's not comfortable. You wait in massive lines to play games. Like, I'm not a big – like, I'm ready to play a game when it's out. I'm cool with that. I've never really been big into getting a lot of excitement out of playing a demo of a game that's coming out in 3 or 4 months, because there's just so much that I can play now. That's me again. I get that people are excited to play new stuff. So just none of it's really sort of my thing, but I do like at – for example, I love panels, right? Being on them and going to them is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So those kinds of things are cool. But like the whole show floor craziness with all those people in there and those crowds, man, I would have been like, I am out of here. It is not a situation where I would be comfortable. And I know there are many, many, many people who feel exactly that way.
Yeah, and it's not a great way to evaluate games. I know we're going to talk to a couple of people who played the games there, or some of them, And I've been in that situation where, first of all, when you're playing a game for the first time, you tend to be pretty positive about it, unless something goes wrong. It is easy to be wowed by the new aspects of it, especially visually or feature-wise. But then it becomes a chore to play. You're standing all day. It's not like they got chairs for you to lounge in, right? You're standing, it's 105 degrees, there's people all around, you're trying to, like, I used to try to take notes and videos and tweet and do all the same stuff at the same time, and it is just, it's not at all an environment that's suited for accomplishing any goals you have as far as getting really, like, good thoughts on what you've seen and how well you think things are coming together. It's a rough situation, and then bringing thousands of people more in just really compounds that, and then it just becomes even difficult to get to meetings or panels, or you get shut out of panels, there's no room, you know, like it's just not, it's not fun. First of all, I would never tell anyone E3 was fun to attend. Even if there were fewer people, I never really found it fun. I found it was something I like doing. I like doing things. I like being around things, but not necessarily part of them. And that would be like me going to Comic-Con. Also, I liked being in San Diego for Comic-Con. I didn't like the crowds and the waits and trying to get through the halls. But it's kind of fun to be around the activity. Be there for it, and then, like you said, you can do things outside of it. But I just don't know what they can do as these companies start to realize that they can hold their own events or do things at different times of the year and be just as effective reaching people.
Yeah, a lot to talk about. I mean, E3 just continues to evolve the press conferences, they're not what they used to be. I don't know why. I don't know if they will exist in 2 or 3 years because of what we said earlier, how they've changed so much and now they're just trailers. If I'm a publisher, it's so hard to justify spending the enormous sums of money to get on that floor, having to spend incredible amounts of time to put materials together to support whatever you're showing too is another big thing. It's so many different variables, so many different ways that E3 can go in the next few years too. You know, I'm surprised that Activision doesn't do something.
Yeah.
Because it would seem to me like they have more than enough to where they would want to do their own show, especially if someone like Bethesda, you know, who's got a nice stable of franchises, does it. You know, that's another thing I think we'll see even more of.
You look who else sits out, like the likes of Take-Two sits it out completely every year.
Yeah, it just doesn't sort of fall within their time frame generally, right? I mean, NBA, clearly
NBA, they could WWE, they could anything, Grand Theft Auto, anytime they wanted to.
But I mean, I think they're smart, right? They have, you know, they're a publicly held company. They have to look at how they allocate their marketing dollars. E3, I have no clue what it costs to participate in E3, but I guarantee you it is an enormous sum of money in the millions of dollars, right? So they've clearly, from their perspective, they're like, it's just not worth it to them to do it. God bless them if that's how they feel, and the success of their games would seem to indicate that they're right.
Do you think sports games need to be at E3 or have a presence there?
Well, I mean, I say no. It's great that they do. Like, if Electronic Arts, if there were no sports games, what would EA have? Like 2 or 3 games, right? So from EA's perspective, it makes complete sense. It really does actually sort of work out pretty well in the calendar for sort of laying out some of the big features for your games coming out in 2 or 3 months. Like, it's a good preview period. But it's not a sports game crowd.
Well, we see that in the reaction to the EA press briefing where,
what do you expect?
Oh, no, sports, here we go. You know, like, what do you expect? They wouldn't even have a press briefing if it wasn't for the sports games. Like you said,
exactly.
They need it. They need that. And they need to reach a bigger audience with it.
Yeah, my gosh. So, but that they're the anomaly, right? So Pro Evo, yeah, I think it was good to see that again. To me, that again, it speaks to the confidence that Konami has in the game, and fans of the game can be happy about that. So from my perspective, that was a very positive message that I got out of E3, at least from Pro Evo. So it really depends, but it's definitely not overall. It's not a sports. It's not the sort of a natural location for sports video games, but there's definitely a couple of good spots that it made sense this year.
Also, does tend to coincide though with the NBA Finals and the NHL, the Stanley Cup, which is usually something they capitalize on. At least EA has done in the past. NHL wasn't there at all this year. NBA Live was. NBA 2K was not. So it's just kind of, yeah, it is interesting timing wise because the sports games are coming out a few months after. It gives them the opportunity to kind of debut them or announce one of the big features, catch some headlines and things of that nature, but they're also swamped by everything else going on, so they tend to fall to the wayside a little bit, except with the likes of us and a few other outlets that cover sports games intensely. But it is an interesting thing to see develop over the years, how E3 has changed and how the company's approach to E3 and now their own events has changed and continued to evolve. So we'll see that continue to happen year to year. So I'm interested to see what happens next year as far as they go. That'll do it for this episode of the Press Row Podcast. Thank you for hanging in with us again. Next week, we'll be back with another episode. Like I said, we're hoping to get some of our correspondents, let's call them correspondents, back to talk about their experience with these games. at E3 and at EA Play. And see, I believe some of them may have even seen it on the Xbox One X as far as Madden goes, which was there at the Microsoft booth. So we'll check in, find out some early thoughts on the games, and we'll see what else goes on in the world of sports gaming in the next week and hit on that. Thank you, Rich Grisham, as always, joining me to talk about sports games and news and everything we love to hit on here at the Press Row Podcast. Everyone, take care. Till then, see you.